Hi, it's Radhika Jones, Editor-in-Chief of Vanity Fair. If you love digging into the week's political headlines, subscribe to Vanity Fair. Our reporters take you behind the scenes of some of the biggest stories from the campaign trail to the halls of Congress. Just for our Inside the Hive listeners, save 15% on a yearly digital subscription to Vanity Fair with promo code POD15. That's vanityfair.com, promo code POD15, for 15% off 1 year of all you can read, watch, and hear. Vanity Fair.
Dan, do you believe the polls showing Donald Trump beating Joe Biden in a head-to-head matchup?
I believe the polls with a shaker's worth of salt, but I take the overall narrative correctly.
You do. So you don't read these and say, the polls, they can't be trusted. Don't believe them.
No. I think all the polls are saying the same thing, which is it's a very close race where Donald Trump probably has the slightest of leads right now, but it's still, we still have 8 months to go.
That is Dan Pfeiffer, a veteran of the Obama White House, co-host of Pod Save America, and author of the Message Box newsletter. And I'm Brian Stelter. Let me welcome you to Inside the Hive from Vanity Fair. You can hear where we're going inside today. We're going inside the political polling machine, with recent polls showing Trump leading in several swing states and showing Biden bleeding Black and Hispanic voters. Democrats have reacted with dismay and, in some cases, disbelief. How much stock should we be placing in these polls? How good are polls really at reading the political tea leaves? Dan, you host for Crooked Media this new podcast called Polar Coaster. So you're the perfect person to analyze this with. First of all, where does the name Polar Coaster come from?
Back in the 2008 Obama campaign, even in a race where we were winning for most of the time, there were all, like every day, there was a Reuters tracking poll, there was a Gallup tracking poll, and a lot of the campaign would live and die. We knew exactly what time they would come out. We'd look at it, see how we were doing. And David Plouffe, our campaign manager back then, would constantly tell us to get off the polar coaster. Stop living and dying with every one of them. Just do your job. And so it is a inside Obama campaign joke that we brought to Pod Save America over the years as we've talked about the polls and our addiction and our listeners' addiction to following the ins and outs of the polls. And so we thought we'd take it one more step and make it the name of a specific podcast for people who cannot get off the polar coaster.
And on the podcast, you have a rating system for people's nausea level when they're looking at these polls. That's really a reference to Democrats panicking about some of these polls showing Trump ahead. So what's your nausea level right now in the middle of March?
I would say it's about a 7.5.
A 7.5 out of 10? That's pretty high.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, the consequences of Donald Trump winning are, in my view, devastating for the country, for the planet, for democracy. And so this election is, at best, a coin flip. And so that's a reason to be very, very nauseous about the polls. You know, and my edict for everyone that I've had as a Democrat ever since Trump won in 2016 is worry about everything, panic about nothing. And that's the approach I take to the polls.
If I were on the Trump campaign, though, I would also be nauseous about the polls because they are close. I don't know if they live in that kind of shared reality world that I live in, but if they did, I would be worried.
Because of polarization in this country, because we're such a closely divided nation, every election is going to be incredibly close, particularly in the Electoral College, which skews Republicans. So we've had our last several elections have been decided by a group of people spread out over six states, smaller than the attendance at a Taylor Swift concert. That's likely what is going to happen again. So we are living on the knife's edge, whether no matter what side you're on, no matter what campaign you're on, there's a reason to believe it would be quite close.
Before we get into some of those details, let's explain political polling from the inside. There have been many liberal critics saying these polls are unbelievable. They're unreliable. There's something going on called unskewing polls, which we had seen happen on the right in the past. It's now happening on the left with people trying to claim the polls are not trustworthy. How much trust do you put in them and why? How do you approach this entire topic?
Yeah, I have a couple of rules about the polls, right? One is don't ever freak out about any individual poll, right? You should look at it, you should analyze it, but it's only one data point. Two is you have to understand the polls are not supposed to be predictive. The goal of a pollster is not to tell you what is going to happen 8 months from now. It is to give you a snapshot of the political mood at this exact moment in time. Hmm. And so many Democrats and anyone who follows politics think that it is telling you what is going to happen, not what is happening. Hmm. And the third one is look at the average, right? There are always going to be bad polls. there are always going to be numbers, individual numbers within polls that don't make a ton of sense. But if you add them all together and average them, that smooths out some of those aberrations and gives you a better sense of what exactly is happening. Does it mean it's going to be 100% right? Does it mean it's going to be exact? But I take the polls seriously, right? If not literally, I guess is maybe the way to put it, right? Like if Donald Trump is up two or Biden is up two, that's still essentially a tied race because given margin of error. And that's sort of how I tell people to think about it, right? You shouldn't freak out because the polling average has Trump up 2.6 now instead of 2.1, whatever it was before the State of the Union. It just tells you where we are right now. And as a political professional, as someone who's worked on campaigns, we view polls very differently. We don't view them to tell us what's going to happen. It's a roadmap for how you get the outcome you want, right? The horse race number in a campaign poll is pretty irrelevant to you, right? You love it if your poll said you're winning. It always makes the candidate much happier, makes the donors much happier. But really what you're looking at is, how's the electorate feeling? What do they know about our candidate? What do they like about our candidate? What concerns them about our candidate? What concerns about the other candidate? And then you use that to develop a strategy. And so I tried to bring on Polar Coaster and my newsletter message box is a campaign operative's perspective to the way normal voters consume these media polls.
Right. Media polls versus campaign internal polls. Let's talk more about that difference. Yeah. Most of us consume mostly media polls, New York Times, Siena, ABC, Ipsos, et cetera. Campaign polling, though, exists for different reasons. As you just said, it's to figure out what are the opportunities, what are the weaknesses a candidate has. Yeah. How do you think the Biden campaign might be doing that right now?
Well, I think there are a couple other differences, too, is that campaign polls generally are probably more accurate in the sense that the campaigns have access to the voter file in these states, and they are calling people off that voter file. So they know the people they are calling, some portion of the people they are calling are people who are registered to vote in that state, as opposed to doing what a lot of media polls do. And there's varying degrees of methodologies that various media outlets use. What a lot of them do is called random digit dialing, which is they just start dialing phone numbers and then asking people, where do you live? Do you plan to vote? Are you a man, a woman? What's your age? Did you go to college? And stuff like that, as opposed to having a piece of information about those voters already. So the campaign polls are probably more accurate. I have seen, I don't know this for a fact, my sense is the Biden campaign polls show generally the same picture as the national polls, because you have not seen a lot of real hard pushback against those numbers. It probably shows the same thing. Maybe it's a little bit closer. Maybe it's a little different in some states where maybe he's up in Pennsylvania as opposed to down one. But the general picture, I don't have the sense that the Biden campaign polls are showing something very different. Okay. But it is guiding what they do. It guided what they did in the State of the Union. It guided that new ad they did where Biden is taking on the age thing. Like they have like real data to make these decisions through their polls.
Your point about the random digit dialing is really interesting because Biden called that out the other day. He said this to campaign staffers in New Hampshire. He said, polling's changed a lot. It's not nearly as accurate. It's not nearly as capable as it was before because you've got to make 6 zillion calls to get one person on their cell phone. How much truth is there to that?
That is 100% true as a actual fact of the polling process. Between 2008 and 2012, the response rate to polls was cut in half. And the big difference that happened between 08 and 12 was the invention of the iPhone.
Oh, right.
And so more people went to cell phone only. And then with every subsequent year, it is getting harder and harder and harder for people to answer the phone because more people are only cell phone and cell phones are more advanced at screening out spam calls.
Mm.
Right. So it's harder to, if you were doing simply phone dialing, it's getting harder to get people to answer the phone. And it is more complicated because a lot of the voters who are going to be very decisive in this election are the ones least likely to answer their phone. More working class voters, Black voters, Hispanic voters, voters of color more generally are less likely to answer. And so you are dialing many, many, many more times to find a statistically significant sample of those people. And so polls are relying more on weighting, right? Where they then take the results they get and then they adjust them to match a model of what they think the electorate is going to look like in November, which is probably pretty close to what they thought it was in 2020. But does that mean they're wrong is the question, right?
Right.
Here's what I would say. The polls were wrong in 2016. They were wrong in 2020, but they were right in 2018 and 2022. Huh. Now, there's probably a reason for that that should give us some skepticism about 2024 polls, and is the group of people most likely to vote in midterms is more representative of the types of people who answer polls. More college educated, older, more politically engaged than the people who vote in presidential elections.
Are there other types of pollings we should also factor in here? For example, online, you know, web survey type work, and is that reliable?
Yeah, there's all kinds of people are trying all kinds of different methods, right? There's online surveys, there's text polling. There's people that are trying to reach people by text because there you get a better response rate on text. A lot of more sophisticated pollsters and the campaign pollsters are doing a mix of all of them, right? Because you get a better response rate generally on the online stuff and the text stuff with younger voters to try to get a mix to increase your response rates among the groups that are hardest to get by simply calling from an unknown number.
So it's a brave new world of polling.
Yeah.
There's also this phenomenon of partisan pollsters, a lot of times coming from the right wing, that seem to be putting out polls to juice news coverage, to make a Republican candidate seem more popular than they are. Am I right?
Yeah, that for a long time that existed with from partisan pollsters, the ones who work for campaigns. Like I've worked on a million campaigns where a public poll comes out that shows you're down, and maybe that poll does not match with your internal polling and your donors are freaking out, and maybe people aren't going to cut checks to your campaign because they think the race may be out of reach. You would publicly release a polling memo. This is how old I am. You'd give it to the hotline back in the day.
I remember the hotline. Yeah.
Right. And they would fax it to everyone in town. And so donors would see that, or you'd give it to CNN Inside Politics or whatever else in its original version. What changed was reporters got pretty savvy to this and they stopped reprinting partisan campaign polls. And so a lot of there were sort of independent partisan funded pollsters who came out mostly on the right, but there are some on the left who will put out polls that will drive a narrative. And you saw that a lot in 2020 when Trump was losing in all the polls. And then you had the Tarrant Group and Rasmussen, which actually just got booted out of the 538 model because their methodology is so off, putting out very pro-Trump polls. Now, I think this is a broken clock situation, but those polls ended up being closer to the actual result than some of the mainstream media polls. But the people are trying to skew the narrative, right? They want the narrative. And a lot of Republicans believe that if people think you're winning, you're going to win, right? This is an old Karl Rove idea that you build momentum. People want to get with the winner, right?
So
if you want to seem like you're winning. And so when all the polls showed Trump was losing, they tried to shift that. And that really flooded right-wing media in particular to make sure the base turned out.
So sites like 538 will try to weed some of these partisan polls out if they seem unreliable.
Yeah, if they 538 has some standards in terms of methodology and transparency and if they don't meet that, then they will take them out. But they are pretty lenient in trying to keep as many in with the idea that it's that more polls is better than fewer polls to smooth out the average.
To smooth it out, right. What I'm hearing is it's harder than ever to poll the country. It's harder than ever to get people to participate in these polls. And yet there are lots of groups trying, campaigns and media polls and other groups. And overall, we should take these snapshots seriously, even though they're really flawed.
Yeah. Like think about them directionally, right? Is Biden doing better over the course of the last month in all the polls? Is he doing worse? Are perceptions of the economy changing? Which way are they changing? As opposed to looking at, in this poll, Biden's economic approval went up 2 points or went down 2 points, or Trump's economic approval. Just you got to sort of think about it directionally. Mm-hmm. And because ultimately from a campaign, that point is to guide strategy. For us as average, regular people, just trying to understand what's going to happen, it's just like worrying about the horse race, I think, just is a mistake. Because it's like, what are you going to do differently if the New York Times Siena poll said Biden was up 2 as opposed to down 5? Other than feel different, right? It's all about managing your expectations and feeling, right? People had a worse feeling about Biden winning because he underperformed the polls in 2020. Huh. Right? We thought it was gonna be an easy night, and it's like, oh, he's gonna win everywhere, and then it wasn't, and then it was really close, and then we went on for days, and that's all a fake thing, right? We've allowed something, an imperfect statistical tool with a large margin of error, to decide how we feel about things and to guide narrative. I mean, you know this better than I do. The coverage of how someone wins a primary or an election is dictated by expectations, and expectations are set by the polls. So with Trump was supposed to get 60% and you only got 55%, that wasn't a big win. Some poll says you're supposed to get 60 and you get 70, overwhelming win. Like, it guides coverage, it guides chatter, it affects the tone that's talked about on cable news at night. And so it's all sort of a fake thing. We've decided this thing that's not real is going to determine everything about how we cover and talk about campaigns, right? It infects the coverage of the campaign. The fact that Biden is down in these polls affects how he is written about all the time, right?
All the time.
It's like the lead. It's the lead of stories about major economic policy. It says Joe Biden, who is down in the polls and struggling to persuade voters about his economic record, today did X, as opposed to the substance of what X is. So polling has utility. I look at it. I analyze it. I want to understand what's happening. I want to tell my readers on Message Box what they can do with that information, how they should think about it, if they're activists or campaign operatives. But it is sort of a poison in our political coverage, for sure. It's a crutch, right? It's a content crutch.
Yes, it does fill the need for constant content. But we're all stuck on this polar coaster together, whether we like it or not. So let's talk about this fall after a quick break.
America has a problem, one that is uniquely ours. On the new season of Long Shadow, I delve into the complicated history of firearms from the Second Amendment to the AR-15. I try to make sense of how we got here and how we might find a path forward. From Longlead, PRX, and Campside Media, in collaboration with The Trace, I'm Garrett Graff, and this is Long Shadow, In Guns We Trust. Subscribe now wherever you get your podcasts.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How is your social battery right now? Is it bursting with energy or drained? How do you recharge it? Have you ever reflected on those questions? Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. And if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/hive today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/hive.
And we're back on Inside the Hive from Vanity Fair. I'm Brian Stelter here speaking with Dan Pfeiffer, co-host of Pod Save America and host of the Crooked Media exclusive Polar Coaster podcast. So here's another polling headline. This is from this morning, Wednesday, March 13th, USA Today. Trump shows slight lead over Biden in new exclusive polls. So we've seen this for months, Dan. No. So many polls showing Trump slightly ahead. How, just on a guttural level, do you explain a disgraced, twice impeached ex-president polling ahead better than Biden?
Well, if you want to do the pure math of it, it's incredibly simple, is that Donald Trump is getting somewhere between 95 and 97% of his 2020 voters, and Biden's getting 83 to 87% of his voters. And so in an election that was quite close, particularly in the battleground states, if you were getting 10% more of your voters from the last time around, you're going to be winning, right? It's just that simple. Now, the question is, why is that happening? And there are probably three reasons that we can divine from the polling. One is Biden's age, right? For even though Biden is barely older than Trump, and in my view, at least quite more mentally competent than Trump, voters have a real concern about Biden's age. And that is particularly true among the sort of voters who are going to decide this election. Independents, the people who voted for Biden and Trump in 2016 and Biden in 20, these voters are swinging back to Trump. And one of the reasons they cite is Biden's age. The second reason is the economy. Is people, for all of the macroeconomic success that Biden has had, which is quite impressive, voters are still very concerned about higher prices. There are signs that may be improving in terms of economic outlook, but people, every time they go to the grocery store, are reminded why they are mad at the incumbent president. That's why it's hard to be the incumbent. And the third reason is voters have developed, it's been described as Trump amnesia. I don't think that's necessarily the right way to do it, but people have a very positive retrospective opinions on Trump's presidency that they did not have at the time. His presidency in hindsight is much more popular than it was in the moment. And it's in part because voters have basically, they do not hold him accountable for anything that happened after COVID started. And so it is the Trump economy in their eyes went right until the second week of March of 2020.
It's incredible, isn't it?
Yeah. Low unemployment, decent growth, lower prices than now, decent gas prices. And so it's at 2019. And this is going to be so frustrating to the Biden people, is Trump gets no blame for how he managed COVID. And then Biden is suffering from having to do the really, really hard work of getting us out of COVID, which has led to not just the United States, but across the world, and an increase in prices. And those elements are what are lifting Trump up now. Now, the reasons I think Democrats should not freak out about that, but that is sort of the set of where we are right now.
And the reasons Democrats should not freak out are that it's only March, that the Biden campaign knows what it has to do.
Yeah, there's only March. Two, Trump is really not in focus for a lot of voters yet. You still hear a lot of voters be surprised to know that he is going to be the nominee. Also surprised that Biden's going to be the nominee.
This just happened to me the other day, Dan. I was in Tucson at some dinner, and this guy looks over me and says, "So is Trump really going to be the nominee?" As if he didn't believe it, right? As if something was going to happen, as if God was going to intervene and come down from the heavens and change the nominee. And I was a little bit befuddled. Like, hello, have you not paid attention to the last year of news? But a lot of people haven't.
A huge swath of the electorate tuned out politics right around January 7th, 2021, and haven't looked back. And this is affecting, helping Trump and hurting Biden. It's helping Trump because most people, they don't want, a lot of the mainstream media stopped covering Trump for years, right? Like you just were not, you did not see video there. And I think for largely decent reasons to avoid, you know, broadcasting disinformation, right? Even as recently as last month, MSNBC wouldn't show his victory speeches in the primaries. And so for most voters, unless you really seek out seeing Trump, you're not going to see him speak, right? He's not on Twitter. Facebook is promoting a lot less politics. And so you're just not encountering Trump. And so for all but the most politically active voters, Trump is just, he's been gone from their lives. This is also hurting Biden because what people do see is stories about Biden's age. They may see out of context clips on TikTok or reels about Biden, many of them pushed by the right, but they don't see State of the Union. One of the reasons people were so impressed with it is the first time they've seen Joe Biden speak in 4 years, right? For any extended period of time. And so it's like the race is not really formed up for people, right? And people, and it's just what is going to happen if and when Donald Trump is sitting at a defense table, like a character on Law and Order, as the presidential campaign's going on. Right. And I think the last week has reminded us that Donald Trump is also a pretty bad candidate at times. You know, he calls into CNN, CNBC, and just vomits up the idea he wants to cut Social Security. He announces that one of his first acts is going to be to pardon the January 6th rioters and insurrectionists.
Who he called hostages.
Hostages, who he did. He plays their We Are the World type anthem at his campaign rallies. And there's a gravitational pull to Trump to very unpopular political issues, which can be exploited once the campaign gets going. And once people are on air running ads, Biden is out there campaigning. And so we're still in the early stages. You know, I would much prefer to be ahead in the polls as opposed to down the polls. I would wish Biden's numbers would be higher than they are. But there's a lot of campaign to happen between now and the election.
Have you seen any signs yet that the State of the Union address helped Biden in polls? Is there enough polling to say that at all?
I know exactly. I promise you, you're going to wait on Sunday. There's going to be a series of chatter on the Sunday shows about how the State of the Union did not, there was no State of the Union bump. It did not help. And that is a very simplistic look at polling. Biden is so well known that, you know, in brand, that one speech seen by 30 million people in a election that had over 150 million voters last time is not going to shift the race in any significant way. I have seen some polling that showed that Biden's approval rating and favorability ratings and concerns about his age improved among Democrats. And, you know, the folks at Navigator Research, which is a partisan polling collective, Democratic polling collective, did focus groups in Arizona when they released these publicly, which showed huge shifts in favorability towards Biden. So change in polling dynamics happen slowly then suddenly. And so what will happen here is the low-hanging fruit for Biden will begin to feel better about him, right? Democrats are planning to vote for him anyway. We'll start telling pollsters they are more excited about it or more enthused or they're happy about it or they're less concerned about his age. And that, but the people who are going to decide the election, they didn't watch the State of the Union. They consumed no coverage of the State of the Union. They don't have politics in their lives. And so it's going to take a while to get to those people. So it was a good starting gun for the campaign that they are going to build on. And I think that ad they ran where Biden's talking about his age and making the joke at the end is sort of the way in which they're going to do that. So this is it. I have seen evidence of the kind of progress that I would expect to see from a very good speech.
Yeah, political junkies are acting as if the general election's underway. And I guess technically it is, since both Trump and Biden have clinched the nominations of their parties. No. But the general election is still far away for most normies. And that's your point. No. A lot of people haven't tuned in. This is not a general election yet.
And one other thing on this, Brian, I think we understate how much the media environment's changed since 2020.
Just since 2020? Just in 4 years, Hal?
Just in 4 years. And there have been a couple of changes. One, 2020, I think, was a little bit of an aberration because people were so dialed into the news because of the pandemic. And a lot of people were in their house. You know, everything, I mean, you've talked about this many times, news coverage and consumption is all about competition for your attention. Mm-hmm. And if you're not leaving your house, you're not going out to dinner, you're not going to a restaurant, you're not going to the movies, people are going to consume more news because there's more hours in the day to do that.
Yeah.
But the huge change, what has changed dramatically is Twitter has sort of died a slow death. Facebook has made a gigantic change in how they promote news and politics. And people who did not seek out political news would bump into it organically all the time on Facebook. Right. They would just be scrolling through for whatever reasons people are non-political junkies are on Facebook, looking for memes, looking at their friends' kids, and they would see political news. Now it is a political news wasteland. People will dial in even later, I think, this time around.
See, I think about casual news consumers, and you're saying maybe there's not that category because you don't casually bump into political news.
Yeah.
That's kind of worrying, actually.
Yeah. I think it's a huge factor in this election that's not talked about enough.
There's also just this sense of people being tired of all of it, tuning out of all of it, being disappointed by everybody. Here's ABC's Mary Alice Parks pointing out a detail from a recent ABC Ipsos poll showing the low favorability ratings for both Biden and Trump.
Now, both candidates' favorability rating so low, 33% for Biden, 29% for Trump. And just more than one in five Americans have an unfavorable view of both Biden and Trump.
Dan, this phenomenon is called double haters, disliking both candidates. Is this a giant opening for third-party candidates?
Absolutely. We are seeing in polls the fewest number of voters identify with the Republican and Democratic Party and the most number of voters open to the idea of voting for a third-party candidate.
Yeah.
And in a race where the margins are so narrow, likely to be so narrow at least, it makes a gigantic difference. Donald Trump won in 2016. But he lost in 2020, even though he did better in every single battleground state, because in 2016, you had a Libertarian candidate and a Green Party candidate who were taking 3-5% of the vote. And in 2020, there was no such candidate. So Trump had to get to 50% to win. And Trump has never gotten more than 47% in a national election. And so if the more candidates taking away the most votes, it lowers the number of votes you need to win closer to his pretty low ceiling. And so it'd be dramatically helpful for him.
That feels like the biggest reason to be nauseous.
Yeah, absolutely. And the thing that I tell people, if you really want to worry about things, don't look at the polls, look at ballot access in the battleground states. Mm. Right? Where is Robert
Kennedy? RFK Jr., he's gaining it.
He's gaining it. The Green Party, where Jill Stein is likely to be the nominee, is already on the ballot in a couple of battleground states because they reached a necessary threshold in previous elections. Kennedy does not have full access yet, but he has submitted, according to his super PAC, the requisite number of signatures in a couple states, including Arizona, Nevada, and Georgia. And it's making, according to them, at least, you know, who knows what is true, to in Michigan as well. And that makes a huge difference. If people are unhappy and looking for a protest vote and you give them a place to go, they may go there, right? And the polls have generally shown that is much more damaging to Biden than Trump.
Let's talk more about some of those individual states in just a minute.
And if you are watching this video, either I'm dead or I'm in a very, very, very bad situation.
She said, oh my God, I can hear gunshots. I can hear men outside.
Where are they? What have they done to them? Are they dead? Are they not dead?
There is one suspect, her father, the Sheikh.
It's Madeline Barron from In the Dark. We've teamed up with our new colleague, Heidi Blake, at The New Yorker to try to answer a question about one of the richest men in the world, the ruler of Dubai.
Why do the women in Sheikh Mohammed's family keep trying to run away?
There's 5 policemen outside and 2 policewomen inside the house. So basically I'm a hostage.
And he reminded me that Sheikh Mohammed can get me anywhere.
Because you're a rich and powerful person, you can effectively break any law you want in our country and get away with it.
The Runaway Princesses is available now. Follow In the Dark wherever you get your podcasts.
If you've been enjoying our show, we'd appreciate you leaving us a rating and review wherever you listen to podcasts. Be sure to hit the follow button also so you don't miss an episode. Hey, welcome back. We're here on Inside the Hive from Vanity Fair. I'm Brian Stelter talking with Dan Pfeiffer about all things polling in 2024. Dan, are there certain swing states that are swingier than others? Is that a word, swingier? Are there ones that you look at most often when you look at, you know, polls in the states? And by the way, are there even enough state level polls to have a real snapshot of the swing states?
There's been a one thing that has changed since 2016 is major media organizations are doing more state level polls, because that's ultimately what's most important, is to know who's going to win the Electoral College.
Yeah.
One of the reasons that the polls, we all thought the polls were so wrong in 2016, was there just wasn't enough good polling in battleground states like Florida, Wisconsin, et cetera, in that election. And so people were shocked. In 2020, the New York Times, CNN, others did more statewide polls. There is some, right? There have been a decent number of ones, and there are some of the states like Michigan and Wisconsin have well-respected state pollsters, like the Marquette Law School poll in Wisconsin. Give us some sense. What we're seeing, the state in all the battleground states, in the average of those polls, Trump has a slight lead. It's a little bit closer in Pennsylvania and was essentially tied in Wisconsin and Pennsylvania. The states that I'm paying the most attention to are Arizona and Georgia, because those are the states that went Democratic for the first time in 2020. Mm. And sometimes you get aberrations, right? Obama won North Carolina in 2008, and the Democrats haven't won it since. But then Democrats did quite well in those states in 2022. So is that a sign that those states have moved into the, you know, pure swing state category? And so I'm keeping an eye on those. There isn't enough great polling in those states to yet get a picture, but the polling we do have suggests that Trump has a wider lead in those two states than what we call the blue wall, right? Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, and Michigan. That Biden absolutely has no path to 270 without winning.
And that's in the fall. For the winter, in the primaries, there was some criticism of some of the primary polling saying that Donald Trump underperformed versus the primary polls, that Nikki Haley outperformed, that there was like a silent or quiet Nikki Haley vote. Is that true? Is that your assessment as well? And what does that portend for Trump?
There are a lot of people out there looking for evidence that the polls are overcounting Trump.
Yes, that's what this gets at. Yeah,
maybe that's true. Right. It could possibly be true. We don't know. The two things I would say is, one, in 2016 and 2020, when the polls were wrong, they were wrong by undercounting Trump.
Right.
Pretty dramatically. Right. And that was
a so-called silent Trump vote, quiet Trump.
Yeah.
Vote.
People have struggled to get Trump voters on the phone. Right. Particularly in rural areas, working class, non-college educated Trump voters on the phone. So that's point one. Point two is, to the extent that polls undercounted Trump, they more undercounted his margin than his total number, right? Mm-hmm. So in New Hampshire, the polls suggested Trump would get around 50%. He got around 50%. What they got wrong was what Nikki Haley would get. And what we're seeing there, which kind of makes some intuitive sense, is that undecided voters went to Nikki Haley at the end. Mm-hmm. And which sort of makes sense. If you're a Republican primary participant and you haven't yet decided to vote for Trump, like, are you going to decide that in the last week, or have you probably gotten all the information you need? And you even see that in some of the exit polls, ask people when they made their decision. And large swaths of Trump voters made their decision more than a year ago. And the Nikki Haley voters, more of them are making their decisions in the final weeks. What those polls tell me is that we're not overcounting Trump per se. What we're doing is that undecided voters are tending to move against Trump at the end. Could that apply in the general election? Maybe. It absolutely could, particularly since a lot of those voters who are moving against Trump are the sort of voters that Biden gained with to win in 2020, like suburban voters, college educated voters, and independents. And so that could happen. I just caution people to not just like take the polls as they are. Don't freak out about them. I hate the unskewing. I think it's just for Democrats, it really exudes sort of weakness. And just, I have PTSD of Republicans doing that in 2012. That's when they famously began unskewing every poll, saying they were overly Democratic.
But it's happening. You see it happening on the left.
It is.
Yeah. Well, here's another area where there's been a lot of skepticism, and that's Biden versus Trump among voters of color. There have been doubts that that Trump is actually making inroads with Hispanics, for example. But I think there is real reason to believe that is legitimate. Here's Fox's Lawrence Jones talking about the recent Times Siena poll.
But this shocked everyone. When you look at Hispanic support, the Democrats have been pandering to the Hispanic community, saying open borders, that is what's going to win the Hispanic vote. But it looks like Donald Trump is getting 46% of the Hispanic vote. Alarms must be going off in the White House right now.
So, Dan, are alarms going off in the White House about that?
The idea that Democrats are shocked by this finding is incorrect. This process started in 2020. Democrats have been thinking about it, working on it. I know it's something the Biden campaign thinks about all the time. We have seen essentially working class Black and brown voters performing more and more like working class, non-college educated white voters. And some of them moving towards Trump. Now, some of that is people who voted for Democrats in 2016 and switching to Republican. But a lot of it is also people who did not vote before, particularly among the Latino community, coming out for Trump.
Right.
It's also, I think, just one important caveat with the Latino vote is political coverage treats it with one broad brush, all Latino voters, right? And then you just have these different groups of them. You have Mexican American people in Texas who live along the border. You have people of Cuban and Venezuelan descent in Florida who polls have shown bought some of Trump's arguments about Democrats being pro-socialist. It is absolutely true that we have seen some movement in that direction in polls. And, you know, from a perspective of a Democratic campaign, now you got to go get them back, right? You got to persuade them. You got to turn out your voters, make sure that doesn't happen, because with narrow margins, you can't win, right? The entire idea that Democrats would become this national party that would dominate White House campaigns for decades after Obama won was based on the idea that we would continue to grow with some of the fastest growing populations like Latino voters and Asian voters that Obama dominated with. And if we don't grow at those rates and we can't grow with the white working class voters who dominate the swing states, we're not going to win. Right. And so there are alarm bells on it, and Democrats are very, very, very focused on it. No one is shocked by this, right? There's disagreement on the margins in these polls, right? Is it really this narrow? That's sort of beside the point. But is there something to be worried about there and work to do? Absolutely.
This idea that Donald Trump has, it's called a high floor and a low ceiling, that he has a cult-like following. That's a high floor that's never going to change, but he's not really going to grow because he has a low ceiling. Maybe that concept we've heard for years, maybe that's not so true. Maybe that ceiling can grow. Maybe he can expand among some demographics that are less likely to vote in the past.
He can raise his ceiling a little bit. There are just still limits on it. The overwhelming majority of Black voters are still voting for Democrats. A majority of Latino voters are still voting for Democrats. And so Democrats still have a much higher ceiling, particularly nationally. Mm-hmm. It's a little different in the battleground states, which particularly the ones in the Midwest are much whiter than the rest of the country. But he is performing better now than he has in the polls, at least, than at any point since he came down that escalator 8 years ago.
So right now, middle of March, would you rather be the Biden campaign or the Trump campaign?
I would rather be the Biden campaign because my candidate is not staring down the barrel of a criminal trial where many polls show that as many as 1 in 5 Republicans would walk away from Trump if he was convicted of a crime.
And the takeaway here is that you shouldn't obsess over any one poll, but you should take all of them seriously as a whole.
That's right.
Dan, thanks for the ride on the polar coaster.
Thank you, Brian. Good to talk to you.
You too. And once again, that was Dan Pfeiffer, co-host of Pod Save America. You can check out his Substack newsletter called Message Box at messageboxnews.com. This episode of Inside the Hive was produced by Gianna Palmer. Stephen Valentino is our executive producer. Chris Bannon is Condé Nast's head of global audio. We had engineering assistance today from Bart Warshaw and mixing by Bob Mallory. And I'm Brian Stelter. You can find me on X and Threads at Brian Stelter. And you can email me with your questions, comments, ideas for the show. I'm at bstelter@gmail.com. And we'll be back in your podcast feed next week.
Three, two, one. Political Breakdown is a daily politics podcast from KQED in San Francisco that goes deep into the issues you care about. I'm Scott Schaefer.
And I'm Marisa Lagos. Look, 2024 is gonna get weird.
Who decides when there's been an insurrection or not?
We're still in the innovation phase of AI.
And that is where you see that they're not actually being equitable and trying to build a utopia where we can all use drugs happily together.
But whatever happens this election year, the KQED politics team is in this with you. Political Breakdown. Find it wherever you listen to podcasts.